Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. My name is Matt Anderson. I'm your host. And joining me, as always, is Alex Jones of TheBigSpur.com. First and foremost, we hope everybody is safe. I know that this winter storm has kind of covered a lot of the Southeast, kind of covered the entire country. Here in Florence, you know, we haven't got it too bad. I know there's been a little bit of ice on roads this morning, but overall, I think everything is going to be okay. But there's still a night to get through. Alex, I think you said you came down, you went down to Hampton.
Yeah, I came back kind of because I thought, you know, Columbia kind of north was going to get the most of it. And I haven't seen too much from Columbia side of things. I've been seeing some videos on Twitter and things like that. But down in the low country, getting some rain and things like that. But, you know, hope everybody out there is doing okay.
Yeah, just stay safe, y'all. Hope we can at least provide a little bit of entertainment for you tonight. So, Alex, I think, you know, on the show tonight, we got a lot to get to. First thing I will say is that baseball has started their scrimmages. So they're in the middle of practice, scrimmages getting ready for February when the baseball season starts. We are going to have John Whittle on the show here probably next week or the week after. He wants to watch as many of the scrimmages as possible before he pops on here. But like I always say, you know, go to TheBigSpur.com. You can read John's articles. He does a fantastic job. And then you have JB, who has gone to a number of the scrimmages as well, knows this baseball program inside and out. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of baseball analysis over the next coming weeks there. And we'll get some here too, but not going to be a priority here tonight. Alex, thank God the portal, I think, is closed, even after the national championship.
Yeah, it's basically closed. You had those Indiana and Miami who had the 5 days, whatever, to get into the portal. But I mean, from South Carolina's side of things, it's pretty over, and kind of overall around the country, we're pretty done with it.
Thankfully. I mean, thank God.
Yeah. It's a long 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I know that people who watch this show are very plugged in. I don't think that the average college football fan realizes how crazy the portal is. I mean, it's like speed dating, speed marriages, everyone's going to Vegas. They're trying to play the craps table, win some money in the process. It's unbelievable. So Gamecocks roster is probably mostly set at this point, Alex. I think that Hale posted something about a long snapper. The Gamecocks are monitoring another one, which is never a bad thing. And then on top of that, there's still players that are in the portal without a home. Who knows who the Gamecocks will go on. But, you know, as we always say, you know, hold your breath until the portal's over, because you saw the last minute things that happened at Duke with their quarterback going to the portal at the end. You saw the LSU stuff, the Ole Miss stuff. I mean, Clemson got into the portal this year and they had a little fiasco, which I'm sure other folks will talk about. It won't be us, but it's just crazy. So I'm glad it's done. Alex, you know, speaking of the portal, we are going to talk though about Gamecock football opponents next year on the show. We're going to talk about a little bit of, it's going to be pretty 30,000-foot view. We're not really drilling down into player-by-player analysis. That happens a lot over the summer and after spring ball on this particular show. But we will talk about where these opponents were ranked, both in National Signing Day, which kind of got glazed over because everyone went straight into the portal. But then we'll also kind of compare 24/7 and On3Sports. On3Sports has a little different way they do their portal rankings. But we'll kind of talk about who's going, who's staying, how many people, where they're ranked, all that, and kind of give, you know, that 30,000-foot view of, you know, what Alex and I think that means in this very way too early time to even be talking about it. But if the information's out there, Alex and I are going to read it and digest it and talk about it here. Basketball, man, was a bit of a mixed bag, I'd say, this week. Both programs went 1-1. The Gamecocks did get that win at home against Oklahoma and then ran into a buzzsaw at Texas A&M. Alex and I will talk more about that here a little bit later. And then the women suffered their first SEC conference loss of the season. Remember, that first Texas loss was actually a non-conference game, but then rebounded to blast Vanderbilt today, who was number 5 in the country and undefeated. So mixed bag. And I think, you know, we'd probably still say the women are faring better than the men this week and every week. And then after that, Justin Lyles from sportscapvalue.com will be here. I know he's got some stuff he wants to talk about, and always love having Justin on the program. But with that being said, Alex, it's time to get to the Late Night Gamecock Show.
Gonna turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooltown.
Well, welcome back into the show, everyone. Like we said off the top of the show, portal season's pretty much over. That's really good. It's time to talk some 2026 football. We always say on this show, football never sleeps. But when you look at South Carolina, they ended up with the 20th ranked transfer class on 24/7, and On3 ranked the Gamecocks 26th in the country. So, Alex, I think you're well-versed in how 24/7 does it. I am too. It's just straight additions. Who did you bring in? How high were they ranked? Neither of these rankings take into account positions of need or anything like that. It's just straight. We rate the players, and it's kind of like a recruiting class in that regard. Yeah, this is their rating. This is how many of them they got. All of that with 24/7, that is. But On3 does something a little bit differently. They actually show incoming and outgoing transfers, and they try to make a little bit of a matrix there, trying to meld the two together. So I do think that's really interesting. So you see who's gone, and you know if they were 4 stars, 3 stars, whatever, and then they just weigh them against who came in. So we're going to get into that. Just a quick reminder, South Carolina did finish with the 18th best high school recruiting class on 24/7 and also on On3. So both services are right there on it. This isn't an exact science, y'all. We don't know who's going to win starting positions. We don't know a lot about the other programs at this point. You know, we're trying to get our bearings on what, Alex, how many other 16 teams in the SEC? So yeah, 15 other teams right now. But what I did, Alex, and, you know, I want you to chime in, you know, throughout, but I just went in order on the schedule. I didn't include the first two games of the year because I don't really think anybody is sweating those right now, and they shouldn't be sweating those. But so this is how I'm going to frame it, Alex. I'm going to tell you the first team on the schedule, what their record was overall and in the SEC last year. Then if they had a new coach or anything like that, we'll talk about that. And then what their incoming freshman class was ranked and what the portal rankings were for both sites. Yep. So we'll start with Mississippi State, another team with a – they have a new coach this year, Alex? I believe they do.
No, Mississippi State's got Jeff Levy. He'll be back.
Jeff Levy, okay, yeah. Arkansas, new coach.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah.
So Mississippi State, same coaching staff, all that, went 5-8 overall and 1-7 in the SEC, had the 30th overall ranked recruiting class on 24/7. This is where it gets really interesting to me, Alex. They had 24 players in their transfer portal class coming in. They lost 38.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see how 13th ranked transfer class on On3. So you kind of see that math there. They brought in better players than what they lost, if you know you go by the rankings and how they rank the transfer portal players. So 13th transfer class on On3, 35th transfer class on 24/7. So, I mean, you already see some disagreement there. So, Alex, you know, our thoughts on Mississippi State and long-term, short-term, what are we thinking? First SEC game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to kind of watch to see what Mississippi State does. That's going to be a big first SEC game for South Carolina. And, you know, they were kind of in it here late for Jordan Seaton, the Mississippi State offensive tackle, the Colorado offensive tackle transfer. Kind of in it. He ends up going to LSU. But there's going to be one where, you know, they got a really good receiver from Missouri who's going to be transferring, Marquise Johnson. So, you know, I think that's one with that offense that Jeff Lebby has. Like, they're going to be able to throw it around a little bit. But I think, you know, it's going to be pretty fascinating to watch early on in their slate, kind of if they were able to take enough of a big step, because I think it's going to be a really big year for Jeff Lebby.
Yeah, and remember, y'all, we haven't analyzed the schedules or anything like that. We'll get into all the nitty-gritty. We'll predict everyone's schedule during the summer. That's one of Alex's favorite segments, I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, my overall bottom line take on Mississippi State, I think they should be improved, but I still see them capping out at 6 or 7 overall wins and, you know, kind of flirting with maybe a 500 record in SEC play. I don't think this is going to be one of the more daunting SEC games on the schedule for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, they did take a little bit of a step this year. I mean, obviously got to a bowl game with a 5-7 record for, you know, all the things that go into that. But they had a good win against Arizona State in the non-conference slate. You know, they had a really good non-conference slate, but then once they got into the SEC part of the schedule, really kind of struggled. So it's going to be a big year three for Jeff Lebby.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Lebby is going to have to win 3 more SEC games than he did last year just to get to 500 in league play. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I think about there. Alabama is the first SEC road game. Everyone knows all about Alabama, but they were 11-4 this year, 7-1 in the SEC. 5th overall freshman class in the country. That's just what Alabama does. You'll see that, you know, for a couple other teams that are on the Gamecock schedule next year. 17 players in, 23 players out. The 46th ranked transfer class on 3. And then the 15th transfer class on 24/7. Those kind of stood out to me there, Alex. You know, how are you, when you talk about winning and losing, you know, players in, players out, when you look at Alabama, 17 in, 23 out, it looks like on 3 is kind of dinging them a little bit for the players that they lost.
Yeah, and they did lose a handful of good players, and that's not even going to count losing your quarterback in Todd Simpson, who's going to the NFL draft. But you know, you're losing guys like Quay Rousseau, who's a really good edge kind of linebacker. James Smith, really good D lineman that's going to Ohio State. And then some guys like Jordan Reynald, who's another edge guy that's going to Ole Miss. You throw in Kelby Collins there, who, you know, was pretty solid overall in the inside D tackle rotation for Alabama. You know, so it's going to be kind of interesting to see how they form that out. But it is Alabama. They're going to all, you know, a decent high school class where they'll be able to reload. We got some good transfers like Ty Haywood on the offensive line, transfer from Michigan. Terrence Green's going to be a really good addition on the interior from a defensive line standpoint. So, you know, then obviously you're going to be able to see kind of what Desmond Umizulu does transferring to Alabama. So, you know, that's one where, you know, it feels like it's going to be another big year for another head coach for Kalen DeBoer in the SEC. Just because it felt like there was a little bit of heat growing there in Alabama for a little while. They were able to kind of get that off. But you know, that's another head coach that's going to be one to watch here in 2026.
Yeah, Alabama is that kind of team for me that I don't see them falling outside of the top 15, top 20, you know, when all things are said and done. I just think they really just have too much talent. But you have seen the kind of clutch factor that Nick Saban had for so long at Alabama where, yeah, he had the best players, but they were coached the hardest in the country. And, you know, no shot against Kalen DeBoer. I think he's a fantastic coach, but it's fit, right? Is it the right fit for Alabama right now? And that's what Alabama fans are saying as well. We'll see, because Alabama's not used to losing 4 games in a season, even when they make the college football playoffs. So,
yeah,
those first 2 games are interesting, Alex, because you know, you had the Mississippi State game, and then you travel to Alabama, and then you come and have Kentucky coming to Williams-Brice Stadium. When you look at Kentucky, 5-7 in the SEC last year, or no, 5-7 overall, 2-6 in the SEC, another new coach. Stoops is not there anymore. Only the 41st best recruiting class in the country, and that kind of comes with a new coach either way. But it's not like Kentucky's been a recruiting juggernaut for a long time. 30 players in, 23 players out. I do think Kentucky got better on the offensive line, and which is really, really important for them, especially, and you think back some of their best teams. But the 39th ranked transfer class on 3, and then the 9th best transfer class on 24/7. So I'm giving these numbers, Alex, just so the listeners and the viewers can see the difference. So, you know, I personally like how on 3 does it better. I still would like to see some tweaks, but that's a stark difference when you say, okay, we had a top top 10 transfer class in the country, but who'd you lose? And, you know, how is that really going to impact you? But Kentucky is a mystery to me, man. The media seems to like them. I've seen them on the outskirts of some top 25 polls, but I just think that's a really big rebuild.
Yeah, they, you know, I kind of like some of the things they did from the transfer portal, but the big thing is going to come down to his quarterback. You know, they had Carter Bowley there, who I thought as the year went on at Kentucky started to play better and better. He ends up transferring to Arizona State, and, you know, Kentucky and Will Stein, who is former Oregon offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach of Kentucky, kind of took a shot at Sam Leavitt to see if they get him, didn't end up getting him, ended up getting Notre Dame backup Kenny Minchie, who, you know, that's going to kind of be the key to see what they can do. And, you know, it gave him, you know, some weapons on the outside. They got Nick Anderson from LSU, who's been an overall solid player. You know, on the offensive line, they added Lance Hurd from Tennessee, who's a tackle and one of the top tackles on the portal, and Colton Price, who will probably be their center, who is pretty solid at Baylor in the Big 12. So I think they did. Oh, they also got CJ Baxter from Texas, too. They're running back. The big name in the portal. So, you know, yeah, I think they tried and, you know, put some money into that portal, but now it's just going to, you know, I think a lot's going to fall into the, you know, Kenny Minchie and a quarterback to see what they can do there.
I always love watching these head coaching changes, Alex, where it goes from an offensive-minded head coach to a defensive-minded head coach or vice versa. And you're seeing that a couple different places. And this is one of those examples of, you know, Stoops, a defensive-minded head coach, and now you have an offensive-minded head coach. And, you know, what's going to be different? Something's going to change. And, like, you know, I see Exo, who's always great in here, said we're dealing with a lot of new coaches, hard to judge teams. It really is, Exo, especially when you talk about these transfers. And, you know, that's why we're really excited to see these spring practice reports that'll come out here just in a couple months. Because one good thing when you're on 24/7 or on 3, whichever one you're on, I think you can read all the message boards on 3, right, Alex?
I think so.
Yeah, and I know on 24/7 you can, because, you know, that's where me and Alex are. But I love reading that stuff because there's a lot to sort through.
Yeah, and with, you know, these new coaches, sometimes you get the kind of that excitement bump that you'll see from a transfer portal class where you'll get – I think you kind of saw that with Kentucky with some of the guys they were going after and were able to get. And I think you're seeing that a little bit around the country. New coaches come in, it's a new energy, things like that. Especially, I think, at a place like Kentucky where it had a Mark Stoops for a long, long time as a head coach, where it's kind of a new era there.
Well, I mean, Florida, we're going to talk about the same thing. I mean, Florida's next on the schedule, 17th overall freshman class in the country. And look, kudos to Florida for keeping a lot of that class together. I think that's another, you know, point of inflection where, you know, some players do commit to the school, and especially down in Florida. I mean, if you read a lot of the reports from kids in that class, I committed to Florida. I wish Billy Napier the best. He was my guy, but I'm sticking with Florida. So 17th best class in the country, 26 players in, 29 players out, 12th best transfer class on 3, 26th best transfer class on 24/7. I mean, Alex, you know, with Florida, it's just who the heck knows now.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say. It's just one of those where we'll find out pretty early on with Florida. Like, you know, they got Eric Singleton in the portal, who's been a pretty good player, was really good at Georgia Tech. And, you know, I think everybody kind of struggled on that Auburn team this year, this past season. A guy that I think could be a weapon for him. But, you know, I think it's just one of those where how quickly can they get that John Summerall kind of system going at Florida? And we'll see that pretty early on, because that's going to be, you know, if you're kind of, well, it's really early to look ahead to next season, but that's going to be a really intriguing game with South kind of going to Florida, depending on where South kind of is at that point.
I think so too, Alex. And this is something that's never worked for Florida. Getting a defensive-minded head coach has never worked for Florida. But, you know, they got the Georgia Tech offensive coordinator, I believe, who I was really impressed with. I think South Carolina kicked the tires on him a little bit. He chose to go to Florida before South Carolina made a hire. I don't know if he would have been the number one guy, but he did bring a quarterback from Georgia Tech with him. Obviously, no one was going to play over Haynes this year, but is he going to win the starting job? Because there's no DJ Lagway now, who wasn't great.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch with Follow, because obviously he's going to know Buster Faulkner's system and all that. Like, obviously, you're bringing that guy in to be a starter at Florida, but, you know, he's going to have that kind of system down. But are they going to have just enough around him in a year one of a new coaching staff? That's going to be the question.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. And then Tennessee, 8-5 in overall, 4-4 in the SEC last year, 9th best freshman class in the country, 19 players in, 23 players out, 20th best transfer class on 3, 21st transfer class on 24/7. I mean, what is everyone going to talk about with Tennessee next year? They got to fix that defense. They have a new defensive coordinator coming in, the guy from Penn State. You know, I don't know if that's enough. I'm a big proponent that at some point, if it hasn't happened already in some games and some matchups, I do think Josh Heupel will get figured out. There'll be different things coaches and coaches scheme up to counteract that, you know, the wide formations where the wide receivers are basically on the sideline each play. And you got to have the right quarterback to run that. I believe that Aguilar has another year next year. I don't know if it'll be him, but I think they signed a pretty good quarterback in the last 2 years. I think it was maybe this past year they got the number one kid in the country. So is he going to step right in and win that job? Can he run the offense? You know, all of those things. Tennessee is one that if their defense doesn't get a whole lot better, it's not going to matter because you can only outscore opponents so often.
Right, like that's kind of the thing where, you know, you can see they trying to attack the defensive line in the portal with Gilliam coming from Penn State, got us pretty highly ranked in the portal. Chaz Coleman was a guy, you know, we've talked about a lot on this podcast, ends up going to Tennessee. You know, how quickly is he going to be able to take that big next step that everybody's kind of anticipating from him? But that's just going – I think that's going to be the big question. Like, I think you know every year about what you're going to get offensive with Josh Heupel and that offense. Like, they're always going to be able to put up some points on the board. But can that defense take a big step this year? And I think – they tried to attack that from the in the portal. Now we'll see if they can, you know, put that in on the field.
Yeah, it's just becoming more and more like the NFL and free agency and, you know, 1-2 year mercenary type deals where, you know, Jadeveon Clowney still had, I think, 7 or 8 sacks this year. He's just been bouncing around on 1 year deals forever just because you get that plug and play guy. So can Tennessee do it? We'll see. Oklahoma, man, 10-3 overall, 6-2 in the SEC, 15th best freshman class in the country, 15 players in, 27 players out, 23rd best transfer class on 3, 19th best on 24/7. Look, Oklahoma had an elite defense last year. John Mateer, who a lot of people had a preseason Heisman selection, I mean, he was getting that buzz, especially after week 2, week 3. I mean, heck, I'm pretty sure one of my good friends put in a flyer on him before he got injured and it was looking good. He was like number one in the race. He missed some games. I still think Oklahoma is going to be pretty dang good. They got John Mateer back. He spurned the pros. It's going to be another year in that system. Mateer knows it. He came with the offensive coordinator. I don't think a Brett Venables defense is ever going to be truly bad. And gosh, I think that they're going to be pretty dang good this year.
Yeah, I don't think they're really going anywhere. And they've kind of helping get some weapons for offensively with Trell Harris from Virginia, guy that's pretty highly ranked in the transfer portal. And then also getting Parker Livingstone, who got South Carolina recruited out of high school, out of Texas, went to Texas. Now he's transferring to Oklahoma, guy that's going to be pretty fun to watch there in that Oklahoma offense. And then they kind of got some help there on the offensive line with Amarian Harris, who's an Arkansas offensive tackle transfer. But to your point, like, you know, it seems like maybe Venables figured it out this year, going back and calling plays for the defense. And I mean, that defense was so good, and you know, they're going to lose some guys from that defense, but I mean, I think they'll pick up right where they left off. Now it's just, can that offense kind of take the next step? Cause they did some good things there, but you feel like there could be more from that offense.
Yeah, they left a lot of yards and third down conversions on the table on the table, and I think they could be better. A&M is interesting, man. 11-2, 7-1. This game's at home for the Gamecocks. 8th overall freshman class on 24/7. We know A&M was spending big money both in the portal and in the recruiting class. 3rd rated transfer class on 3. 11th transfer class on 24/7. 18 players in, 14 players out. I'll be honest, Alex, that's exactly what I'm looking for in a program going forward. I'd like to see less than 20, and I'd like to see you pretty much bring in about what you lost, because that tells you that you are developing players. So that's what's happening with A&M. Lots of money. The question I have for you, Alex, is how good was A&M truly last year? They benefited from a pretty weak SEC schedule. When you go back and look at things, couldn't predict that in the preseason. But, I mean, South Carolina, even with all their dysfunction last year, had the potential to rout A&M on their home field. But then, look, A&M goes into college football playoff and, you know, play a really daggum good game against Miami, one of the best games of the season. And who are they, Alex? That's the question. Who are they, and can they take that next level?
That's going to be the question for A&M. Like, you know, they kind of just reloaded at some positions offensively with Isaiah Horton coming from Alabama at wide receiver. Guys like that. I mean, again, like a Ricky Gibson at quarterback that was good at Tennessee. And Anto Saka, who's an edge from Northwestern, that thought was a really intriguing portal addition for him. So I kind of feel like they'll be right back to where they were from a talent level because they're obviously recruiting in high school ranks so well too. So I feel like they'll kind of be right there from that standpoint. But then it's just, again, I feel like we're going to say this for a handful of teams now. Can they kind of build on that, you know, be able to kind of build on that success, but also take that next step? But because they were right there with Miami. I mean, had hosted Miami in the first round playoff game. So can they kind of get back to that point?
Yeah, and I mean, I've said it 100 times on this show and others I've been on. Like, A&M, for me, is always going to A&M until they don't. And, you know, you kind of saw that against Texas. And then, you know, they go into the CFP game. And I personally didn't think Miami was, you know, the second best team in the country going into the college football playoffs. And that game was kind of a drag there for a little bit, but it did get very exciting at the end.
Yeah.
I just don't know, man. It's just one of those things. And I see XO said that the Gamecocks schedule could turn out tougher this year than last. It definitely could. But that's kind of my question with A&M is if A&M had played a tougher schedule like other SEC teams had, would they have even been in the college football playoff? You know, you don't know. And we can't really take much from right now even. That's why I say it's way too early to do it. But at the same time, it's good to know the opponents.
Yeah, I mean, you look at next year's schedule, not to jump too ahead to that, like, just so much time left. But, I mean, you're going to have an Arkansas who we're about to talk about here who's got a new head coach, Florida who has a new head coach, Texas A&M, are they going to be who they were next year? Like, just a lot of questions that, you know, maybe could fill that schedule one way or the other from a, you know, is it going to be tough as this past season or maybe does it kind of slide back a little bit?
Yeah, and you go to Arkansas the next, and that is a road game. Arkansas was 2-10. Overall last year, 0-8 in the SEC. Alex just mentioned it, new coach. 38th overall freshman class in the country. 41 players in, 37 out. That is practically a new team when you think about the freshmen as well. I don't know how many freshmen they signed, Alex. I should have pulled that. But when you have 41, let's just say plus 15 to 20, that's three-fourths of your roster. How the heck can anyone predict what Arkansas is going to be? Ninth best transfer class in the country, according to On3, 28th transfer class on 24/7. My question is Arkansas just in the wilderness right now? Because I mean, it's going to be really tough sledding for the new coach. And then you don't have a Bobby Petrino anymore who, you know, despite 0-8 in the SEC, he was putting up points, yeah. Gave Tennessee all they could handle. And I talk about a game that game might have hit 100. I can't remember what the total points scored was, but what's going to happen this year? How can you get better? I just don't know. And that pains me to say it because you're going to get better than 0-8. I guarantee they don't go 0-8 this year. But I mean, I told JB they might be my surprise team that the media is underrating when I was on the show with him last week, just because the media is going to look at 0-8 in the SEC and 2-10, but they brought in 40, three-fourths of the roster, let's call it. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think with Arkansas, is basically everything you said, we're not going to know until the season starts with them what they're going to look like with a new coaching staff, new head coach, and just so many new players coming in for the portal. Like, it's just one where we'll have to find out early on as the season goes on who they'll be. And is it going to be a program that is going to be, you know, take off in year one? I'm not sure, but we'll see with Silverfield, like, you know, if he can get that program going. Because it's been a little while. Like, you know, Sam Pittman had those, you know, a really good year kind of early on with KJ Jefferson and guys like that when that offensive line was really good. But it's just, you know, we'll see with Silverfield what they're going to be next year. It's just, you know, it's going to be, you know, kind of fun to monitor spring practice and preseason camp leading into the season to just kind of get a feel for who that team exactly will be.
And then, you know, you got Georgia at home. It's the last home game of the season, the last SEC game of the season. Georgia went 12-2 this year overall, 7-1 in the SEC. 10th best recruiting class in the country. That's a little dip for Georgia. But I always say once you get past 3-4 ranked recruiting class in the country all the way down to 15-16, just throw them in a hat. But this is what I love about Georgia, man. 8 players in, 14 players out.
Yeah. I mean, they built through high school.
Yeah, 53rd ranked transfer class on 3, 31st class on 24/7. They don't care, man. Georgia's Georgia. They're going to recruit and develop, and they're going to be a beast again.
yeah, they recruit, develop, they have, are really good in player retention, then they'll kind of fill the holes needed through the transfer portal. I mean, this year they got Isaiah Canyon, who's a really good freshman receiver for Georgia Tech, and I think a guy that could kind of take off with them. I mean, Dante Dowdell's a guy South Carolina's pretty familiar with, a Kentucky running back who had a good game against them. And then, you know, Amaris Williams at edge. Like, they, you know, they just, you know, they have built that program through the high school ranks, having top 10, top five classes, really, these past few years under Kirby. And then they just play your retention, and then they just build through there. So we'll see kind of with Georgia, what they're going to be. But, you know, as you can imagine, they're always going to be towards the top with Kirby there.
Yeah, I mean, Kirby, I'm just not going to doubt Kirby Smart ever here. But more years than not, especially going forward, he's going to be there as long as he wants to keep coaching. Then you close the season at Clemson. Clemson 7-6 on the season, 4-4 in the ACC. Really a dip for Clemson as well. It's been happening for a while now, a couple years in a row, but 24th ranked recruiting class on 24/7 for freshmen. 10 players in, 12 players out. And so, like, when I'm talking about Georgia, I really like that. When I'm talking about Clemson, I really hate that for them. I mean, for their fans. I mean, that's because when you have the 32nd ranked transfer class on own three and the 72nd transfer class on 24/7, I get Clemson fans' frustrations with the transfer portal for whatever reason. You know, they're trying to build it like Georgia, but they're not recruiting the level Georgia is. And I mean, I don't know about you, Alex. I mean, I think this is kind of is what Clemson is for the foreseeable future. If they can't recruit top 10 classes anymore, if they can't get that generational quarterback anymore, if they're not going to play in the transfer portal, and we're not going to get into it, as I said earlier, but, you know, Clemson did have some issues with the transfer portal that Dabo had a pretty public press conference about. Anytime you win two national titles, there's going to be a drop. And this is just one of those cases, man, where they might have a nice record against ACC, but the ACC is getting better too. And I just wonder if Clemson is.
Yeah. I mean, you see them get into the transfer portal a little bit more than these past few years, but is it going to be enough? I mean, just, you know, I think the question that's going to be with Clemson next year's quarterback spot, you know, they decided not to go into the portal for a quarterback. So that's going to be kind of what drives that offense next year, is that quarterback, if they're able to kind of, you know, build them, or, you know, kind of stay at the level that Klubnik had them there. So, you know, we'll see. That's going to be really interesting to kind of follow to see what they do just from an offensive standpoint, because defensively they recruit well enough just that they're going to be there. But, you know, at that quarterback spot, that's going to be kind of the talking point of the offseason for them.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, kudos to Dabo for that, honestly, man. He believed in his guy. Let's see what happens. But I just – it's not how I would run a program. I mean, and that's no shot at Clemson. It just really is. You see all the numbers we just put up for how the SEC is doing it. And it's just tough. It's a tough look. So, Alex, we got to get to some basketball stuff here. Look, we'll start with the women. And I do have a question for the women for you, Alex. But, look, they blew a lead against Oklahoma. The game went to overtime. They ended up losing. Shocking. It's not often the Gamecocks lose to a team ranked outside of the top five, top three in the country. I think Oklahoma was 16th. Oklahoma did win again today. They'll probably make a pretty sizable jump, I would imagine, in the polls. That's a marquee win for them. But, man, did those women come out to prove a point, especially, I mean – I guess Vandy got it within seven at the end of the first half and into the start of the second, but then they just turned it on, man. They won by 29 points, gave Vanderbilt, who was ranked fifth in the country, their first loss of the season. Vanderbilt's now 20-1. Gamecocks have two losses, but I'm pretty sure they sit atop of the SEC standings right now, and a whole tiebreaker is over Vanderbilt and Texas. So it'll just be my question to you, Alex, is, you know, you saw them lose to Oklahoma. Is this team a Final Four team in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I, you know, really want to see how they bounce back from that game today, because when you look at that Oklahoma game, it just, Chavez just went off, especially once you get into overtime and just took over that game. Then you had a big bounce back opportunity today. Like, how is the team going to come out in a top five type of matchup and really just completely dominated that game. Like, as you mentioned, Vanderbilt kind of cut it close at one point, but you just always felt like South kind of was in control of that game. I mean, you had, I think it was Tessa Johnson and Tanaya Latson combined for 41 points, and you had Medina Okot, who I thought was big to see her have the good game that she had today, with 17. You had, you know, Raven Johnson, Joyce Edwards go for 26 combined points. But then defensively, I thought they were really, really good today. Forced 20 turnovers. Vanderbilt turned the ball over 20 times. And I don't have the number on how many points were turned in that, but it was a lot just because the defense was, you know, just all over Vanderbilt. I mean, Kayla Blake's one of the best players in the country, and you knew she was going to be able to get her points for Vanderbilt. But just overall, just a really stellar performance from the South Carolina today.
Yeah, it was just let her get hers, and we'll beat you. Like, yeah. I don't care if she goes for 30 or 40. We'll beat you if that's really all we give you. So, Alex, you know, when we talk about the men did beat Oklahoma, and, you know, I was on the show with JB earlier this week. We were talking about it, and we're kind of talking about what the Gamecocks had to do. And I thought they needed to get to at least 7 wins in conference play, 8. They needed to have a winning record. I still don't think, as crazy as it sounds, that game was a killer in regards to that, because you were planning to lose some games anyway. But just the way in which the game was lost, I think at one point A&M went on like a 31-7 run, and you got to stop runs. I mean, I talk about it all the time. You want the best run in the game and the last run in the game. But if the other team's best run is that good, it's really hard, even if you get the last run. 12 threes in the first half for A&M. That's bonkers. I mean, that's absolutely bonkers. I mean, there are teams that don't hit 12 threes in a game the entire season, let alone in a half. And I mean, in one game in a season. But Alex, you know, what are your takeaways from the men's side of things? And I'm sure we're going to get a million Lamont Paris questions.
Yeah, when we were on the show on Friday, we basically talked about it. You know, the keys to the game were, you know, you can't let A&M get some early momentum or get those runs going. It with turnovers and things like that. And the turnovers kind of popped up. And then A&M just went on that run, like you talked about in the first half, hitting those 12 three-pointers or whatever the number was. And it was just it was over from there. You just didn't see South Carolina coming back in that game. And that's a team where they just feed off of that momentum, especially when they're full-court pressing you and things like that. And it just it got to South Carolina. And then the threes just kept falling, and it was just no shot from there.
Yeah, there really wasn't. I mean, it's tough. It's tough because, like, they're just – the roster construction is baffling. I kind of saw what Lamont was trying to do, but if you can't do what you want to do with your team 80-90% of the time, like, your team has to be like capable of what you want them to do 80-90% of the time, or it's not going to work. And yeah. I don't know if this team got space jammed and from the shooting department, but, you know, like, turnovers haven't been a killer this year for them. And that was one of the things I said in the preseason. Just cut down on the turnovers and make more shots. Got to shoot better from 3-point line. And that's just really – that's really not happening. I have been frustrated. I see Jay Diz in the chat. Lack of point guard play, absolutely. I don't know if Eli Ellis would change things in that regard right now. Eli really needs to buckle down and be a score-first point guard. He needs to try and play like Devin Downey, honestly. I mean, he's not Devin. No one's Devin, but – that's kind of what he needs to be, because Devin could still facilitate the offense, get the ball up court, all those sorts of things. So maybe that's in the future for the Gamecocks. The timeouts thing is frustrating to me too, Jay Diz, because a lot of coaches want their teams to work through the problem, and that's just not always the case. So we'll talk more basketball next week, I'm sure, but we got to get Justin in here. So, Alex, let's take a quick sponsor break, and we come back. We'll be gambling and rambling with Justin Lyles of SportsCatValue.com.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cars while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, Talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck slash trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. I'm Matt Anderson. Joining me is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. And Justin Lyles is here, sportscapvalue.com. Justin, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing good. How are y'all? Are you surviving the storm apocalypse?
Well,
whatever we want to call you.
Yeah, we're doing good. Yeah. Hanging in there.
How I mean, you look like you're bundled up, my friend.
Yeah, I've been in and out all day, so I just kept the beanie on, and I kind of like it. It's kind of feels good, so we'll roll with it.
I mean, all I did was just play with the Traeger all day. I've been outside all day just cooking stuff. A lot of stuff we needed to cook anyway, but you know, meal prepping, man, that's how you get through the week. Keeps you going, saves time. But yeah, in Florence, everything seems okay. I mean, there's some ice on the road, stuff like that. School's canceled, but all is good. So, Justin, man, what's up your way? Tell us what's on your mind tonight.
Well, obviously, we've got the, we had a nice game on Monday night with the college football national championship. Closing out the season, Indiana pulls through. Obviously, they did not cover from a betting perspective. Laying around 7.5 around kickoff. I know it got up to about 8.5. It reminded me of having a chance there to win it at the end, but Indiana makes a play. Miami kind of Carson Beck throwing interception. Just all around great game. And then with Mendoza, that fourth and goal or fourth and whatever run to score that touchdown, and what Cincinnati did on the calls going forward. I love that about a coach. When you go, you're in the moment and you go for it. You go to win the game, and you're playing not to, instead of playing not to lose. So, got to give them a lot of credit, and really, hopefully, should give Gamecock fans some sort of perspective on it can be done from other schools outside of the Blue Bloods. So, that's really my first kind of takeaway as we kind of jump into the show.
Yeah, Alex and I think, I don't know, Alex, you and I, we haven't talked about the game yet. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great national championship. I thought there were numerous times when, I mean, I literally texted some group chats for like, okay, that's it. Indiana's going to roll now. And then Miami just never gave up. I mean, we've been talking about Carson Becking at some point. I honestly don't hate the read. I think that the DB just made a heck of a play to, you know, kind of come back to that ball knowing he had safety help and not just going where, you know, really he should have gone. And that's just coaching.
Yeah.
And Carson Beck probably thought he had a touchdown pre-snap. I mean, he looked to the right, looked to the left, probably thought he had a TD. That would have been wild. It would have been crazy. But this NFL game today, did you watch the the Patriots and the Broncos?
Yes, I caught the second half, and man, talking about some weather conditions, flipping it upside down, you know, just in all different directions. You couldn't even see the ball on TV when they were punting, wherever. I don't know how they were marking it and whatnot, but obviously the under cashed with ease. I did not have a side on the total, but I was on the Broncos +3.5 come kickoff. And it's just fascinating to watch how that game, just from a offensive strategy of just run, 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 punt, and or throw it out of bounds intentionally like May did on one of those plays, I thought was very fascinating. But New England makes a play down the stretch and is headed to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I was watching that game second quarter. I mean, the snow, you can see the snow starting to fall. I may or may not have fallen asleep for like 30 minutes. Woke up, and then it was just covered in snow. I was like, what happened? But not too surprised to see Mike Vrabel coach team win a game like that where it's just the hard-nosed, tough team who's going to be able to run the ball. I mean, that's exactly what he wants to do. So it wasn't too surprised to see them be able to kind of do that. And that, you know, it was one of those games where, you know, just the weather you knew was going to play a part in it, but which team could make the fewest mistakes, and ultimately Patriots did that.
I love these kind of weather games in the NFL. They're some of my favorite, especially in the playoffs. But I totally understand why the Super Bowl is not played in anywhere that can have weather conditions like that. Because while it's fun, you don't want that to be, you know, for all the marbles. But, I mean, it was today for the Broncos and the Patriots, which absolutely stinks. I don't know how the wide receivers can see the ball. I mean, some of the catches that the Patriots kids were making, I was like, did the ball just, you just see it right here and put your hand up? I don't know.
It'd be fun to play in, I think. But, like, man, I don't know what you do from a formation standpoint of how you're going to move the ball. It's just wild.
It was funny watching that field goal that the game would have been game-tying field goal. He kicked the ball, and then they had the angle. You couldn't even see the ball once it got past, like, 5 yards down the field. And I'm pretty sure the ref didn't see it until it got right up on him.
Oh, yeah. So, Justin, we do have the Rams and the Seahawks playing right now. Did you put any plays in for that today?
Yeah, I was on the under. I am on the under, I say, since the game is going on under 46. I think it's 10-6. I haven't checked the score before.
13-10 now. Kyron Williams just ran it in, 9-yard touchdown. So, 13-10, less than a 2-minute timeout in the second quarter.
Yeah, so we're right there on that you know, total. If it does hold before halftime at 23, so it'd be 46. So, yeah, I'm on the under, and that's it for the NFL. So, obviously, it's going to be a fascinating game whether the Patriots play either team. I mean, I think it's going to be you got Drake May versus, obviously, if Stafford wins or Darnold. I mean, it's going to be a good matchup, really good defenses on both sides, regardless of who wins the game.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to be fun to watch. Do you ever do live betting, Justin? Do you ever throw something in live, or is everything pre-flop?
Well, on my website it's all pre, you know, pregame or whatever, but because with live betting is you got to turn it around, ASAP, you know, in a matter of seconds. And I can't get that to all my subscribers that quick, you know, without being able to follow, the plays and odds for that matter. But yes, I do like live betting, especially in football where you like a team, maybe you're kind of worried about the line. You might want to say, okay, I like team, let's say, you like the Patriots in the game, but they got down 7-0. That's would be a perfect time to live bet them right then and there. So, yes, I do, to answer your question.
Do you ever do it to hedge your bets if it's not looking like the way you want it to go pre-flop?
Well, that's where you got to be cautious. I mean, that's a very good question, because sometimes you don't want to go down that route of chasing, and you have to be very careful, because that live betting is sharp. I mean, it's just like when they make the lines. It's in-game data that they're processing instantaneously. And so I'm very cautious about that when trying to find value.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you're a baseball guy, Justin. I want to ask you a quick question here. And I had this for me and Alex. We just didn't get into it earlier. But what constitutes a good baseball season this year in your mind for the Gamecocks?
Oh, man, how much time do we have? Yeah. Well, obviously a disaster season last year, so you've got to make the tournament. I think you've got to – I mean, I think the standard is, my opinion, being a South Carolina guy, I mean, you should be hosting a regional every year. I think that should be the minimum. That's just my opinion. I'm sure there's some folks that would probably argue that. But what has been built over the last several decades. You should be hosting a regional at minimum every single year. That's the standard. And then what happens from there is what happens. So I think getting for this season, I think it's getting back to the playoffs and getting, or I should say the tournament, and going from there. So I think that's what success is for this coming year.
What about you, Alex?
I feel pretty much the same way. Like, I feel like it's, you know, this program has built itself to where, you know, in that run where it was hosting at least a regional every year. And I feel like that's where the program just every year just about needs to be in that range.
Yeah. So I talked to John Whittle about this, and I actually had him on the show once. Alex, I don't think you were on with me then, but I told him that the Gamecocks need to host a regional 8 out of 10 years. They need to make the Super make the Super 6 out of 10 years, and they needed to go to Omaha 3 out of 10 years. And I kind of did an 8-6-3 rule, and John told me I was crazy. He was like, the SEC is really good. You're going to get matched up with other SEC teams. He's like, that's what a fan says. And I'm like, well, you know what? I think they should do it. And so, I mean, when you say hosting every year, I don't disagree, because, I mean, you got to be top 16 to do it in most cases, right? So you got to be a top 16 team. At least
be in contention to host every year.
Yeah. Contention to host. That might, yeah.
I agree. And I think a lot of that, too, back when, you know, South Carolina was making those runs with those back-to-back titles, the SEC wasn't as strong. Maybe there was 5 good teams. You know, now it's 8, 10, 12, yeah, whatever it is. I mean, I think that's a big deal, too. I mean, it's kind of like with football in the same era. It's just gotten so much stronger. Since you asked that question, Matt, what about basketball? What's the expectation for basketball?
Probably have a whole episode on
that. I have an opinion on this, but I want to hear y'all's.
I think you play in a good enough conference that you can go get the wins you need to make the tournament in any given year, right? I think that with the transfer portal now and the ability to go get guys, with the proper investment from boosters, which I think will come if – I mean, we just saw it with South Carolina. Basically, the South Carolina booster said, we're not going to give you the money to fire Shane Beamer because it's going to be expensive. We'd rather give you half of that extra money to go get the players, and then we'll make a decision after a year. So right. I think that basketball follow the same suit. I really do think that Gamecock, 4 out of 10 years in the NCAA tournament, like bare minimum. I mean, that's what most Power 5 teams do. They can get there 40% of the time. You should be on the bubble every single year, and sometimes break through to be a top 6, top 5 seed.
I'm right there. Yeah, I'm right there with him on that one.
Yeah, I think the goal should be to make it every year. I mean, obviously that's not reasonable or, you know, like realistic, but you got to be in the contention every season. You can't be out of the season come mid to late January. And the Gamecock fans deserve better. I mean, I think the NCAA tournament, I don't think people realize, people talk about college football and they get caught up on all the payouts and stuff. And it's all revenue sharing, but at the end of the day, the NCAA tournament pays out a lot of money to these teams that make the tournament. And I think a lot of the fans don't realize that how crucial it is for our men's team to be in that NCAA tournament and not going once every decade on average or whatever it may be that the average is. But this one, and there, you know, Paris has been here, this is his 4th year, and he's been once. So, I mean, we're going to see how the season shakes out. They've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and that kind of dovetails into another question I had for Alex, and that's, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. Sorry there's not a lot of gambling tonight, y'all, but I like picking Justin's brain on some other stuff, too. I'm sure we'll get into the Super Bowl coming up soon.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I don't know how far back, Alex, I mean, you're younger than Justin and I. Justin and I are about the same age, so, you know, we're about to touch 40, and, you know, you're still a young buck. But, you know, I was wondering today, like, is there a past basketball player that you would bring back for this team that could help them make the NCAA tournament? Like, give me this guy and they'll make the NCAA tournament. I think I have an answer. I'm down to 2 players, and it's not probably who you'd think.
I would think it has to be somebody in the post. I don't know if one. I don't know if there's just one that I can think of off the top of my head where – you know, I would say I'd be really interested to see a Colin Murray Bulls on this team, just for what he can do to help them in the post. Go ahead. Who do you have? I want to know who you have.
Because I don't know. Unless you want to go, Justin, I can go ahead and go. I'll give you my 2, and then I'll give you my final one.
What's the guard we had that made us that we took to the tournament 23? I'm drawing a blank.
Talon Cooper.
What's that?
Talon Cooper.
Yep, that'd be one of them. The point guard is the most crucial position in college basketball, in my opinion. I mean, you go look at those national title contenders, they all have stellar point guard. And at the end of the day, usually the one that has the best point guard has got a really good chance to win the national title. So I would go with Cooper just based on recency bias, how crucial he was for us making that tournament. Like, if we don't have him, we probably don't make the tournament. I know Michi had a great year. Oh, if I had to roll the dice back in history, I'd probably say, I guess your Florence boy. What's his name? Powell, right?
Carlos?
Maybe something like that. Yeah.
Carlos was a dog, man.
He was a dog.
He was a dog.
Who are you thinking?
So I actually went back, not as far back as Carlos. I went kind of in between. Actually, I went one before, one after Carlos. I was between Melvin Watson, just for having that point guard that could break you down, get 5-6 assists a game, really help spread the floor, get the ball up court. Melvin was a freak. He was shifty. He could break down defense. He could get layups. He was only 6'1", but he was good. And then Devin Downey. Devin Downey is just a bucket getter. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know if Devin might score 50 a game right now and not get a service. So I went Melvin Watson, but that was just my
thought. Here's an under-the-radar name. Like, what about a Chris Silva on this team? A guy who could hit the three a little bit, but also he gave you a lot in that post, rebounding, defense, things like that. Like, maybe not if it's just him, the South guy's making the tournament, but, you know, it's just – you know, I think Talon Cooper, to Justin's point, would definitely help on this team. I just don't, you know, having a guard, I don't know if that would help the post issues, though, that are kind of really hurting this team right now.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. Right. You talk about the team that went to the Final Four. You just threw out a bunch of names, and is you know, it all makes sense with, like, all these players that we had at those positions. Like, they fit those kind of stereotypes that what you need to make a deep run in the tournament. And that's exactly what happened in 2017.
Yeah, Cam brings up PJ Dozier.
Chat. I mean, Cam in here says PJ Dozier.
We need a coach. Just got a comment.
Yeah, someone says we need a coach. I don't know, man. I mean, heck, Sindarius Thornwell would not be bad on this team. He could do a lot of things.
Sindarius Thornwell would help.
But I think the bigger thing here. Yeah, I mean, SEC Player of the Year put 44 up on Alabama that one game. I think the greater point here, and where I was trying to go with this, is the Gamecocks need two of those guys on this team. Yeah. Like, we can't even sit here and say that one of them would be, you know, what the Gamecocks need. So that's tough. I mean, I think it's just a tough look, and it's going to be a tough season. And, like, just like you said, Justin, to basically be out of it at this point in the season, it just kills a fan base. Absolutely kills it.
It's you're right. And that's the thing, is like, these fans deserve so much better, all of us included. It's you know, when Colonial Life is rocking and sold out or nearly sold out, it's just the best atmosphere I think there is. It's very underrated. And I hope our administration really puts a heavy focus on getting the basketball for long term success.
This happening 2 years in a row is just not what South County, especially, you know, the talk coming off of that NCAA tournament bid was, you know, can South kind of sustain it and build off that? And obviously just haven't been able to do that. Like, I think the three of us can probably have a whole episode conversation on Colonial Life Arena, because that's a topic that comes up every time. My opinion, that's not a problem. That's not an issue, just because of what we've seen from a Florida game 2 years ago where the arena was sold out, Tennessee, things like that. But that's a whole other topic that we can get on some other day.
Well, yeah, and we got to actually make room for the SEC Sunday night boys as well. But I do think it's funny. Exo said we need Jesus at this point. He can fix everything. Absolutely, y'all. Get right with Jesus. Don't let this stuff really bother you that much. Jesus is always the answer, y'all. But Justin, man, loved having you on. We'll definitely pick your brain again next week. Alex, as always, man, appreciate you. It was fun getting dinner with you a couple weeks ago. We need to do that more often. And, y'all, we just hope you all stay safe out there. I know there's still some iffy areas in the state. Hopefully, you know, stay warm is all I can say. And hopefully it'll be over here before we know it. But, everyone, thanks for joining us tonight. Hope everyone has a great evening. And for Alex and Justin, I'm Matt. We'll talk to you on the flip side. See you guys.